This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Welcome, Arizona Cardinals fans, to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. It's episode 232. We're in the middle of training camp, and we're a couple of days away from the preseason opener. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, USA Today NFL Wire site, covering, of course, the Arizona Cardinals. And my co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. And Seth, we have actual fake football coming soon. We're recording on a Tuesday night. Are you excited for the preseason opener?
No. I mean, kind of. It's hard to be excited because we don't know how much anybody that really of consequence is playing. It sounds like Kyler Murray may get like a series. I doubt Larry Fitzgerald, Chandler Jones, Terrell Suggs. I guess Patrick Peterson will play or won't. I mean, what do you think they do with Patrick? That's the problem, is there's more questions about who's playing than not. It's exciting that there's NFL football. It's exciting that we get to see the infancy of the Cliff Kingsbury era. But in the end, this is basically an evaluation tool for guys like Drew Anderson and maybe some lesser guys, you know, lower down the depth chart and on the roster to figure out, you know, whether or not they deserve to be part of the final 53. So in that instance, it's interesting. But you know, in the end, it's still going to be mostly a very long, drawn-out scrimmage.
Yes, it will. I'm excited for the preseason because it's actual games. You're going against other teams. But at the same time, because the Cardinals are going to play their starters very little, if at all, it's just going to be – it's going to be leaving me – like, I'm excited, but I know I'm not going to be satisfied. Like, obviously – when you cover the Cardinals, you're a Cardinals fan, and so you're interested in all those little intricate and little position battles. So you're looking at, oh, Joshua Myles or Corey Cunningham down the offensive line battle, or is Caleb Wilson going to show enough to make the team? Or you get your first look at some of these younger guys, especially the draft picks. And you're hoping they stay healthy. But in this episode, we're not going to talk about just about that. In fact, there's some news that we're going to talk about. We're going to focus on what's happening in the wide receiver room, because Michael Crabtree apparently came to town. We're going to talk about what happened with Crabtree and the wide receiver room and why they might have been going after that. We're going to talk about some of the injuries, some of the left side. So we're talking about Justin Pugh, Mason Cole, A.Q. Shipley, and what it means for the next few weeks. The offensive line injuries, there's a couple of them. Are there concerns? Are there any players the Cardinals should be out there looking at? We're going to talk about what we've seen in camp over the last few days since we've had a few more practices. There was the red and white scrimmage over the weekend. And then we're going to talk about the preseason opener. What exactly do you want to see? That's kind of next on this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, episode 232. Let's start with Crabtree. So, the report came out Monday afternoon that Michael Crabtree had been signed by the Cardinals, which was a surprise. Pro Football Talk had that report. But then there was no announcement, no big deal. But then later in the evening, so it was between 9 and 10 at night, Ian Rappaport nationally and John Gambadoro locally said, no, there was no, they didn't sign. Gambo said that there was a contract offer made. Rappaport made it sound like there wasn't one, saying it was just due diligence, but there was no intent on signing him right now. Then Adam Schefter in the morning said that they also made a contract offer. So there's two guys, one national, one local, saying there was a contract offer, but nothing happened of it. Obviously, the biggest thing that happens when this ended up occurring is the fact that, well, they've already thrown out a whole bunch of resources to this. They signed two free agents when bringing in Kevin White and Damir Bird they drafted three receivers. Why in the world would they be going after Michael Crabtree? What do you think?
It seems to me that the easiest answer is that Kevin White is struggling to stay on the field, and Chad Williams had struggled to get on the field. And so basically, you bring in a veteran to replace two veteran-ish type guys. I mean, neither guy has really played in enough games to be considered an NFL veteran, but they've been around the NFL long enough that they're considered veterans. So I think to me, that's all that says is it's a, you know, kind of that four or five guy that they've been looking for. I mean, when we've talked about this, the three names that have come up are always Larry Fitzgerald, Christian Kirk, and then Keyshawn Johnson. I don't think any of those changed. I think that Andy Isabella was injured and out for a week, and I don't think that the Cardinals were exactly thrilled with who stepped up and kind of felt like they took his snaps over well, so they were going to bring in some competition, and it just, for some reason, whether a contract was offered or not offered or whatever happened, it didn't work out. And now Isabella's back. Damir Bird seems to be playing at a higher level all of a sudden. And, you know, magically Chad Williams is back. So all of a sudden, you know, you see a couple guys get healthy. You see a guy step up. Sometimes that's all it takes. I don't really make much of it. I mean, we're talking about, like I said, like we've talked about before, I think the top three guys are kind of played their way. Either they came into the season that way, or they've played that way during camp, that there was really no question on the top three. So this is, we're talking a fourth guy at best.
For me, what made the most sense about this is it's just kind of interesting. If you look at kind of the makeup of what they've seen, what we've seen as the wide receiver rotation, you look at the personnel, you've got Larry Fitzgerald, you've got Christian Kirk, you've got Andy Isabella. Fitz plays more inside now. Christian Kirk, he can play both, but where we've seen him line up is more inside. Andy Isabella, they view as a guy they're going to play inside. What they haven't had, and Keyshawn, which the rise of Keyshawn Johnson has been fun because he's a guy who can play that outside position. In practice, who we've seen on that other side is a lot of Damir Bird. I don't know if that's how you want to go with the season, but because Kevin White has kind of, you know, it's the newness and he hasn't been super consistent. In fact, the days that I've seen him in practice, I've not been impressed. Especially going against the twos, I would expect him with the physical talent that he is to flash more. Like take this a couple of years ago when we talked about Blaine Gabbert a lot. It was the summer of Blaine Gabbert, and we said when he was getting time in the preseason, he should look like the best player on the field. He was obviously a former top 10 pick, former starting quarterback, and you're going against the second and third teamers. He should look like the best player on the field, and he did. Kevin White is not flashing. He did all right from what I understood and what I heard in the spring, but he hasn't been impressive now. And so if you're looking for a reliable outside receiver who you can count on, Michael Crabtree's kind of that guy. Crabtree has had a nice career. He's definitely, if you look at what he was supposed to be, he's definitely been a disappointment overall. But if you look at his career as an NFL career, it's been a really nice career. He's entering his 11th season. He's been a starter his entire career. He's had a couple of 1,000-yard seasons. He's good for, like, even the last couple of years, he's good for 50, 60 catches for 600-plus yards. He's not going to put up math monster numbers, and he's going to drop a few passes. But he knows how to play the game. He's smart. And so I think he'd make a good fit. It would just change the dynamic of that room kind of quickly. Because as it was, I didn't have, like, when I did my 53-man roster prediction over the weekend, I already had Kevin White out. And so I had Fitz, Kirk, Keyshawn, Andy Isabella, Hakeem Butler, and then I had Damir Bird and Trent Sherfield. If Crabtree's in there, you have to figure that he's probably making the team at this point. And so then you're looking at, well, does Bird stick around? Is it Sherfield? And it's the special teams back of the roster guys that tend to be affected. Is it a smart move? I don't think it's like a bad move. But as the Baltimore Ravens found out, Crabtree is, as long as you're tempering your expectations for a guy like Crabtree, don't expect him to be a number one or even a really good number two. Expect him to be a reliable guy. Just, you know, just a guy out there who knows how to play the game, who's a veteran, who has done it, who has had big seasons, but you can't count on him to be big.
Yeah, and the thing is, again, when you're talking about the wide receiver room and you're talking about that far down the depth chart, you don't need him to be a, you know, 80 catch, 900 yard guy. You need him to be a 45 to 50 catch, 500 yard guy. And so that's, you know, that's that reliability that you're talking about. And God forbid, you know, Keyshawn Johnson go through his rookie slump that he's inevitably going to go through this year. All of a sudden you have a guy like Crabtree that's already in-house in the roster. You don't have to worry about the, you know, is Isabella, you know, is Andy Isabella ready to go up? Is, you know, or move up and, you know, take the spot? Is, you know, Hakeem Butler ready? You know, this guy or that guy? Like, you don't have to worry about any of those things. So that makes it, you know, nice. But on the flip side is this, and this is where I think you kind of fight philosophy, and that's if you're really going to embrace this chaos of Cliff Kingsbury, if you're going to embrace this going towards Kyler Murray and these guys, I think being comfortable with growing pains has to be a thing. And I get that that you don't want it to be so bad that you David Carr this guy, but at the same time, you're talking about a guy that's going to be your fourth wide receiver at best. I mean, is it really that important to get a veteran in that spot over letting, you know, Isabella and Johnson and Butler and Bird and, you know, maybe even Chad Williams grow?
Right. And do you really need more veteran than Larry Fitzgerald in that room as well? That's the thing.
Well, and the other thing is, I mean, Crabtree has some, I mean, he hasn't been a bad teammate, so I don't want it to come off this way, but he has some distractions in his past. On field.
And guess what? We would see that in full display. Aqib Talib twice a year. Like back when it was Denver, when it was Broncos Raiders. Oh.
Well, and he's had some dust ups with Marcus Peters as well. So.
All right.
It's
and
just
Richard
one of those
Sherman
things.
Too.
Yeah, Richard Sherman. Thank you. That was the other one. Yeah. And Sherman. And so when you look at it, it's like, really, it's always that question, is the juice worth the squeeze? And in that case, I don't know, is a soon to be 32-year-old possession receiver that's going to be your supposed third to fourth option really? I mean, is that worth it? And to me, the answer is just no. I mean, especially at the numbers that are allegedly being thrown around, you know, $2 million a year for the year with incentives and stuff. I mean, just it doesn't – it just seems over the top.
Well, and the interesting thing is what you told me before the show is that it – there are conflicting reports out there in a way. And then you said you normally get a heads up on if there's someone of note getting signed, and you didn't get that.
Yeah, I mean, just usually, you know, I have somebody that, you know, works within the organization that, you know, I don't ever break news. I mean, you can look at my Twitter. I can't even remember the last time I tweeted. I never break news, but I usually get the information if it's coming, you know, that day. I usually get the information around 8:30. And then I text Jess, so he has a chance to write something up. And, you know, it's just kind of that – it makes it easier for Jess and I. Then we're not trying to scramble at our real jobs at 2 o'clock in the afternoon when they announce these things. We just – oh, they announced it. Okay, we can push publish, and we're done. And so, you know, I try to – you know, I try to give Jess a heads up. And, yeah, I didn't get that. And so when the news broke, I was like, huh, that's –
that's weird.
That's a little different because I knew they had Crabtree in on Sunday. And usually you just get the follow-up, you know, like, hey, we're going to make an offer. And it didn't come that day. And so, you know, that's not to say it didn't happen. You know, full disclosure, Jess and I, I told Jess, I think, what was it, 2 weeks ago, that they were probably going to sign Nick Perry because they brought Nick Perry in for a workout and they just were not happy with his workout. And so it just ended up not working out and they didn't sign him. But I, same type of thing. I text Jess early in the morning and said, hey, I just got a tip that they're probably bringing in Nick Perry. And, you know, Jess and I do our thing and then it never works out. And then, well, we wasted 10 minutes, but we were prepared.
Oh, we wrote an article we didn't have to publish.
But we were prepared just in case it did happen. So, I mean, so it's not, you know, it's not foolproof, but most of the time we get a little tip and we kind of, you know, we keep it under our hat until the team is announcing it. And yeah, we just didn't get that this week. So it was different to see, Mike Florio, huh? Like this is, and, like, Florio has a ton of information. I mean, he has more information than Jess and I could ever imagine. But he also gets a lot of his information from agents.
Agents are not the worst source, but there's definitely an agenda when you get information.
Right. They're great sources. They are fantastic people, but you also have to remember that a lot of them are working for their client. And so does it look good for a guy that's trying to get back, you know, get onto an NFL roster that a team is willing to offer him $2 million? Like that was the weirdest thing to me is like when the numbers started to come out, I was like, that's weird. 'Cause the Cardinals are super, like they are like mum's the word when it comes to salary until it hits kind of the NFLPA site. Like they're never ones like where you're getting that information right away. Especially at this point in the off season where the numbers are so small and minuscule, you usually don't see anything. So that was the other thing that really kind of perplexed me is, and Schefter and Gambo and all those guys, they're 100% could be accurate that the Cardinals made an offer. But just when numbers start to get thrown around, that's when I get like leery. 'Cause I'm like, the Cardinals are one of the most close to the vest organizations when it comes to letting numbers get out into the media, early.
And with that, coming up next on the Rise Up Seaward podcast, we'll be back and we're going to talk about kind of the situation with three players in particular on the offensive line, Justin Pugh, Mason Cole, and A.Q. Shipley. That's kind of the next on Rise Up Seaward. We're back on the Rise Up Seaward podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And we have our first offensive line injury of training camp. And lo and behold, Mr. Justin Pugh, after missing 9 games last season, 8 games the year before, he is going to miss a couple of weeks. He has a shoulder injury. That affects not only his position, left guard, it also affects the center position because, number one, it's going to be Mason Cole, who now starts at left guard in the preseason, at least in the preseason opener. And now A.Q. Shipley will basically just hold on to that center position. And it's going to be kind of interesting because Mason Cole might not have a shot at center anymore because he's going to be playing left guard. I don't know, even though he said a couple of weeks. So let's say Justin Pugh is injured just 2 weeks. That puts him back, just barely getting back to practice, the week of preseason game 3. Okay, and that's the best case scenario. And what have we heard from Cliff Kingsbury so far? He has undersold, I think, every single injury that there's been. Because DJ Swearinger, yeah, a few days. It's been 2 weeks until he came back. So Pugh probably won't play the rest of the preseason, which means there's no center battle anymore because Mason Cole won't be playing center. He'll now be playing left guard for the rest of the preseason, which isn't a terrible thing, but we saw him in practice even playing left tackle. I'm not quite sure what the situation was there, but, you know, so Mason, we now have our starting left guard who's not going to get any preseason reps, and you have the center position all but decided now.
Yeah, and, I mean, you and I had assumed that Shipley was going to win that job. It just seemed like that's where the Cardinals were leaning in that case. But it was definitely one of those you don't have a guy you're pulling for other than you're just pulling for the younger guy, just so there's, you know, this continuity throughout, especially for Kyler Murray. But then you look at it and then, you know, Justin Pugh played left tackle and you're like, what, wait, what? And then Justin Pugh is now basically your starting left guard. Mason Cole played left tackle. And then Mason Cole is basically your starting left guard. And you're saying, wait, I thought Mason Cole was competing for the center position. And it's almost like Mason Cole has a more important job than just being the starting center. He's going to be like the key backup. He's going to be the, which guys have we had there over the years?
John Wetzel, Earl Watford,
kind of utility guy over the next several, probably this season and maybe that's his career trajectory at this point. I'm not 100% certain. But, you know, when you look at it, it seems to be that the team hasn't bought into Cole as the starting center at this point. That's the thing is, if it's such an important position, especially in this offense with Kyler Murray and like trying to grow this team together, you would think inevitably Cliff Kingsbury would want Mason Cole to win that job, right? Because they'd have the guy to kind of grow with Kyler. And, you know, while AQ probably has the higher IQ, as well as maybe being a little bit more physical at this juncture of his career, he also is not the athlete Mason Cole is. And when you're talking about wider splits, you're talking about more area to cover for the center now. And so you've got a guy in Justin Pugh who has been perpetually injured throughout his career. And then you've got a guy in J.R. Sweezy who's not necessarily known for his athleticism, but instead known to be kind of a mauler and a brawler inside. And so now you're adding AQ to that mix, and he is the same as J.R. Sweezy. They're just, you know, they're brawlers that they want to fight in that 6-inch booth with you, and that's what they're going to do. They're not going to be guys that are out there reaching and pulling and getting into zones. So it's interesting that's who's winning this battle at this point, because you would assume, like I said, that everybody would be kind of secretly rooting for Mason to be the guy.
In a way, yeah. Now, at the same time, they sort of set up the offensive line this year to have a bunch of experience. After they had a bunch of inexperience last year, they said, okay, we're going to fill this line with vets. AQ's coming back. He's 10 years in the league. You bring in Pugh. He comes back. J.R. Sweezy, Marcus Gilbert, D.J. Humphreys. And where Humphreys is the least experienced, and this is year 5 in the league for him. And so I can see why AQ has kind of felt like the leader of the pack, especially on a team that wants to do more than just have Kyler Murray play. They do want to compete, and protecting him with guys, granted, while it's a new offense, with guys who have been around the game longer, I can see why they'd want to do that. But the whole idea of that center competition, where it was probably going to take the rest of training camp to decide that, now it's been decided. Cole's not going to get any more reps at center, and he is a bench guy. I mean, unless Pugh's injury goes into the season, Cole's going to be a bench guy, or he'll end up starting the year at guard, which in fairness, was kind of one of the reasons why they got him. Because he played mostly left tackle in college, played a year of center, and they saw him more as a center who could play guard.
Right, and so, you know, that's the thing with this lineup is that you've got a lot of guys who there's some question marks, but then there's some versatility. You've seen Lamont Gaillard get time at center and then at guard as well. You know, we talked about Cole, kind of he's hit 3 spots now. He jokingly said he's probably not built for left tackle in the NFL, but and I think we would agree with that. But you know, maybe he'll find a place for Homer or Wally Pipp, you know, Justin Pugh. They have brought in a bevy of different types of guys. The question is, who are the best 5 and how do those kind of line up in the end?
Coming up next on the Rise and Freebird podcast, we've got other issues to deal with on the offensive line, believe it or not. So we'll talk about that coming up right next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And not only, so now we already knew. We knew this season coming in that this was an offensive line where injuries were going to be a concern. So Justin Pugh's out a couple of weeks, maybe 3, probably the rest of the preseason. Although he might be healthy at the end of the preseason, but won't play in that final game. D.J. Humphreys, he's been in and out of the lineup. He's been on. He's hasn't really finished a season yet, other than his rookie year when he was inactive. Justin Pugh's missed a ton of time. AQ missed last year. Other than that, he's been super durable. J.R. Sweezy's been durable. And Marcus Gilbert at right tackle, also durability concerns. Gilbert tweaked his groin on Monday. And so, knowing this, with the injury to Pugh and the minor injury, albeit minor, to Gilbert, does this raise concerns for you already?
I mean, it has to, because the biggest thing with this group has been, you know, staying healthy. Can they stay healthy? Can they, you know, really compete? And then you look at the way Cliff wants to play, and he's kind of talked about tempo and how they need to have tempo in order to get their offense to work properly, you know, things of that nature. And then you look at the fact that they're struggling to have guys stay on the field, basically. You've got three starting linemen who are having, you know, kind of nagging issues injury-wise. A groin is never a good thing with when you're trying to play up-tempo. Obviously, you know, a shoulder won't affect the up-tempo-ness of things, but, and then we know about the laundry list of lower body issues with DJ. When you look at the fact that they have a guy like Kevin White, at wide receiver, who Cliff has all of a sudden kind of been, I would say, the most critical we've heard out of him be against a player thus far. Would you say that's fair?
Yeah. Cause, you know, yes, that's actually very, very true. He's been very, very careful not to say much and to say, well, he's got to, and he didn't exactly call him out. These are obvious things that he's got to battle consistency and availability.
And so when you talk about that, one of the things that it's talking about is not just day to day, but play to play. And the thing is, when they talk about tempo, one of the things with tempo is the ability to dictate towards the defense. And what that does is that allows you to have one personnel group on. So say they're in that 11 personnel that we kind of talked about last week, where they have, you know, three wide receivers, one tight end, and one running back. And now all of a sudden you can do a multiple of things. You know, if it's Charles Clay, maybe he's playing H-back, maybe he's in line, maybe he's in the slot. And so that's your personnel on the field, but you're lining them up in different ways. All of a sudden, if you have a player that's struggling with maybe conditioning or fitness or anything like that, and these kind of soft tissue deals, you know, whether it's Marcus Gilbert, whether it's whatever the deal is with Pugh's shoulder, I mean, I'm not going to speculate what's going on with DJ Humphreys. It might have just been like a day off, right? Like, let's just.
That it was. That's what they said it was. It was just a day off.
Yeah, for a 24-year-old. But yeah, so, you know, when you look at it from that perspective, like, you can't rotate, because that's the other thing with tempo is you're playing at a pace to wear out the defense. So the defense either A, because remember, if you don't substitute, the defense doesn't, they can substitute, but they could get caught, you know, out of position. They could get caught in different ways, you know, too many men on the field, or that the offense goes so quick that they're not able to get their subs in. But as soon as you sub on offense, you have to allow the other team to sub on defense. And that's one of the problems. And so if these guys, more than anything, if they're not in shape come game one, then the tempo's not going to be there.
And that becomes obviously a concern. Now, if in fact that they're developing guys behind them, I don't know what to think about Riso Diambo, but I know that they're very high on Corey Cunningham. So maybe they were willing to risk bringing in a Marcus Gilbert with his durability concerns, because he has the high end potential to be really, really good. And even if it's hurt, then they trust that Corey Cunningham can do that. So maybe that's the case. Nonetheless, this notion that they've revamped this offensive line and they're already having injury problems is something that, fair or not, the second any offensive lineman gets any sort of injury, every Cardinals fan is going, oh, not again. It's just the way it is, because of the way they put that line together.
Well, and that's the unfortunate reality of it, is that they deserve it, right? Like, they've they've struggled to stay healthy. He's just, you know, it's just it. Keim has tried a number of different things, and I saw somebody tweet out, you know, about Cliff Kingsbury inherited this terrible offensive line, and I mean, that's just not true. It's not accurate because he didn't inherit the same offensive line as last year. This is three guys are new starters, and then the fourth guy is at a new position. So literally four of the five starters at positions are different from last year. So he didn't inherit anything, but he didn't exactly get a ton of help from his GM in creating a incredibly talented offensive line. An incredibly healthy offensive line, because they do have talent when healthy. They don't ever stay healthy.
And there's not much you can do about that, and that's the unfortunate thing. Coming up next on Rise of Sea Red podcast, we're going to come back and talk about, well, who stood out for the Cardinals in the last week or so. That's coming up next at Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And another week of practice, training camp's gone by. There was a red and white practice where it was a whole bunch of scrimmaging. And let's talk about the players who have stood out. I think, obviously, number one, we have to continue to talk about Keyshawn Johnson, who continues to make plays, continues to be consistent. And so the guy that, I'll be honest, I thought would not necessarily make the roster because of where he was drafted, is looking like a starter and continues to look like a starter. And are we looking at an Anquan Boldin type? Like, if you can remember to Anquan Boldin's debut, I didn't know anything about Anquan Boldin leading into that season. And what did he do? Have 20 receptions in his debut against the Lions? Wait, this seems rather parallel.
Yeah, and you look at what he is as a player, and the reality is he's not a guy that blows you away with numbers. What he is a guy that I was talking to somebody about him today, and like, I don't know how to say this without it coming out as like complete hyperbole, so I want people to understand how I'm phrasing this, is that he is like 33-year-old Larry Fitzgerald, if that makes sense. He's a guy that knows how to run routes. He is as sure-handed as they come. He's able to create separation despite being a 4'6" guy. He just understands how to get open, and then, as we joked about last week, catch the football. And so when you kind of look at how he plays, he plays like a guy that has been in the NFL for 5 or 6 years. You know, when you talk about comparisons, it's hard because the names that you have to throw out, because there aren't a ton of guys that come around like Keyshawn in terms of maybe lesser athleticism that end up playing, you know, at a high level. And so you end up talking about guys like Keenan Allen and guys like that, as opposed, and so then the expectations are, oh, well, he's going to be really good. And I think he will be good, but he's not, you know, I mean, Keenan Allen was a 4.71 guy, right, at 6'2", 206. And Keyshawn was a little bit faster than that. Who's the guy? Mohamed Sanu is another guy, you know, maybe not the best timed guy, you know, high 4.6s. But he was able to be consistent. So when you look at it, that's kind of where the realm he is. He's that steady possession type guy, and that that is a guy that is just knows how to play football, and it's just, he's a cliche basically. You know, he's like, you know, grinder, knows how to play the game, things like that. And that's what you hear about him and in his abilities. And it's been there basically, what would you say, every single practice?
Yeah, it's been super consistent. I mean, incredibly consistent. And, you know, it's exciting to see. Anyone else stand out to you in particular in the last
week? I think Robert Alford is really kind of from the scrap with Demary Byrd to he's taken on the role. It seems like he almost has something to prove. And maybe he does. I mean, I thought he was a pretty hot commodity for a guy that's heading on the wrong side of 30, coming off the year he came off of with the Falcons to have as many suitors as he had. But I think he's really kind of embraced being the leader or the soon-to-be leader of that secondary once Patrick leaves, and he's kind of stepped up into, okay, I'm going to be the cornerback one on this team for the first half of the season.
And he's been very physical. I like the mental makeup. He's going to scrap. He's probably going to have a few penalties. But the one thing that you're going to see, he's going to compete, and he's not going to shy away from anything, which is something that you like to see. A player that quietly seems to be right in the mix for an outside linebacker position is a guy that, I'll be honest, I didn't know much about him other than he was listed on the roster. Pete Robertson, listed up until just this last weekend at inside linebacker. Has been playing outside linebacker. He's gotten first-team reps with Chandler. He seems to be number four on the depth chart. You've got T. Sizzle, you've got Sizzle and Jones, you've got Brooks Reed. But because Reed was out and days off for Chandler or Suggs, we've seen Pete Robertson get first-team snaps. And he's an interesting case because he's built like an inside backer, and I think that's why they bumped him over there for when he was on the practice squad. But he told me, he's like, I've played the edge my entire life. He's 6'2", 243, so he's short for the position and undersized for the position, and yet he's had an impact. He hasn't done much in the pros yet, but he played at Texas Tech for Cliff Kingsbury, had 13 sacks his junior year. I don't know what this is going to mean, because once the game starts, this is where guys like Cameron Malvo and Vontaze Dora will tend to flash, because they love rushing the passer, and they're going to be going up against backups on the offensive line, so they kind of look like the exciting guy that everyone is in love with these guys. Like, how can you not keep them on the roster if all they do is rush the passer and don't do anything else? They don't play special teams. They're not disciplined against the run. I'm excited to see what Robertson has to offer during the game.
Well, and it's interesting, you know, you talk about like Cappy, he's not on a roster, right? Like, so it's not like, I mean, did the Cardinals miss, and I don't even know if they technically miss, but if did the Cardinals miss on, who's the Cam Wake, you know, what was that, 12 years ago or whatever, after the Super Bowl, right? Coming out of the Canadian League, things happen. But it's not like Cappy's gone on and become a sack master for another team. So, you know, if they are one-dimensional and that one dimension isn't as good as, you know, a Terrell Suggs or Chandler Jones, and then they can't play as a full-time guy if somebody gets hurt, then yeah, you're right. But I think Robertson's been kind of a breath of fresh air. And when you talk about in terms of that position, because you got a lot of guys with guile and understanding, but you don't have that kind of hair on fire athletic freak right now. And not that they need that, because, I mean, Suggs and Jones are fine. Brooks Reed is, you know, a good veteran. Andre Branch is a good veteran. But in the end, Robertson's kind of, you know, been the athlete of the group. And so I think that's played well for him, where it's a complete different look, or completely different look for the offense when he comes on the field, and you know, he's coming at it from a different way.
Anybody else that stands out, that stood out in the last few days?
You know, I wouldn't say like stood out in terms of like every single day, outside of obviously Kyler Murray, but I think Damari Bird has kind of stepped up a little bit. You're seeing a little more of him as a receiver, and not just a deep threat guy, which I think is important in this, you know, kind of what we started off the show with, this battle to be that fourth receiver. I think he's done a nice job. And then you haven't seen a whole lot from the linebackers, which is, I think, or the inside backers outside of Jordan Hicks, which I think is obviously going to be like the biggest concern right now.
And coming up next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, we're going to talk about, finally, we'll talk about the preseason game. What are we hoping to see? What do we need to see? That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red, best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And we have the preseason game coming up this week on Thursday night. What do we want to see? I think, Seth, you and I can both agree on one thing, that the number one thing we want to see, let there be no major or nagging type injuries. You know, if it's, you know, a thigh bruise or this or that, or a sore hamstring, something that...
Yeah, somebody takes a hit and they just need to leave the game for the game. It's football, but yeah.
Let's stay healthy somehow. Somehow let's stay healthy. For a team that's just dealt with injury after injury, injuries early are going to be bad for the fan base. Are going to be like, oh, again, here we go. And so, obviously, health is number one. If we're not going to see much of the starters, if especially it's going to be one drive from Kyler Murray, honestly, I want to see a run. Just to see it.
And just see how fast he really is.
I want to see him in the open field. I want to see it happen, because it's kind of flashed it in practice, but he's never turned on the Jets. I mean, I'd love to see that.
Yeah, and I wonder how much of it you will. I mean, maybe a scramble, but I wonder if you'll see anything designed, like a RPO or anything like that. You know, the first thing I want to see, obviously outside of the injury-free, is I would love to see how this offense is just lining up. I know it's going to be vanilla in the air raid sense. You're not going to see shifts. You're not going to see personnel groupings. You're not going to see exotic plays. But are they in 11? Are they in 10? Are they in 12? Like, what are they lining up as? I mean, did you see today they lined up in the power eye with Kyler Murray under center?
Did you read that?
Yeah, sorry. Did you read that today? Yeah. So, I mean, what are they going to come out and do in week one? And what is Cliff going to show, you know, to start with? We know it's going to be nothing important or big, but how do they just come out and get their timing and the flow down to this, what is hopefully going to be a revolutionary offense?
That would be ideal. I want to see the second team offensive line. I want to see some players stand out. It'd be great to see a Corey Cunningham or a Lamont Gilliard sort of stand out and flash a little bit against those second stringers. Giving you hope for the depth on the offensive line, since since we know there's we're all going to be just waiting for the injury to happen to someone on the starting lineup.
Yeah, and you know, in the same way, I think you want to see what Chase Edmonds is going to offer, and I know it's not going to be much. It might be, you know, he might get two or three series, but I want to see Edmonds, and then I want to see if Andy Isabella is playing and Hakeem Butler. I want to see those guys. Like, are these last two drafts going to be something that they can build on, or is this, you know, is this falling in the line with 13, 14, 15, you know, the drafts? Obviously, you know, we're not expecting fireworks, but are we going to see competent play? Are we going to see guys that can hang, or even like look like they belong with the starters, be in, you know, kind of overmatch the second teamers? When we're talking about guys like, you know, Edmonds and Isabella and Butler, who may be vying for starting time.
Another guy that I got to see stand out is Zane Gonzalez. They've been super confident in him all offseason, all through camp, even when he missed 3 40-plus yard kicks on over the weekend. I will say this, his kicks look good. It hasn't been the wobbly or the off target that we saw in the past from a Chandler Catanzaro before who was just absolutely nails, but he's been super dead on. But I want to see that continue, because I want to think that the Cardinals know what they're doing by bringing in a kicker with no real competition at all, who hasn't really established himself in the league yet.
Yeah, and I think that's a good one. And, you know, we've talked about this, the danger of just leaving it as Zane. I get the confidence building part of it, but if he misses one or two, then all of a sudden are you like, oh, crap? Or is he like, oh, crap? You know, I think the other thing is, and this is like kind of out there, but I'm interested in Drew Anderson. You know, we talked about agents earlier and stuff like that. I know that their goal has, and their kind of long-term vision, had nothing to do with 2019 other than to show enough to get a chance to be on the practice squad. Their long-term vision has been to be the main backup for Kyler Murray in 2020. And so I know that sounds crazy to talk about, but when you just look at it and you say, if you're going to, you know, Scott Bordeaux tweeted it out, and we kind of poked fun at him a little bit the other day during the red and white practice, but, you know, how much the offense is Kyler reliant. And that was kind of a knock on Brett Hundley and Chad Kanoff, and even Anderson to an extent. But can one of these guys give you 70% of Kyler? Can they do, you know, the Drew Stanton, where they're giving you 70-80% in terms of competency at the position, and keep you afloat for one or two games? Because here's the thing, whether Kyler Murray is 6'5 or if he's 5'6, there in his career, he's going to miss games. It happens to everyone not named Eli Manning. So he's going to miss some games. The question is going to be, will they have somebody competent back there? And I think this is, you know, a good barometer to see, are these guys moving the offense? Can they handle the entire, and I know we're not going to see it, but can they handle the entire repertoire of the offense, or does it have to be completely scaled back? I mean, that was kind of the big thing with Sam Bradford to Josh Rosen last year, right? Is they had to scale back the playbook because it was too much. And I know what playbook, but, you know, it was too much for Josh. You know, you don't want to have to do that if Kyler has to go out for a series or two during the regular season. You want to have confidence in these guys. So, you know, Hundley and Anderson, are they going to be competent enough to be backups long-term for Kyler Murray?
That's a good point. I mean, there's all sorts of players that we want to see for. I can't think of anything else in particular. I'm always looking for individuals. You want to see flashes from the skill players. You want to see guys like, and we don't know if Byron Murphy's going to play. He missed apparently today with a foot injury. But guys like Chris Jones, who've been really good in camp, you want to see that continue. You
Nate,
want to see
Nate Brooks
and Dietrich Nichols and see what they can do, because those are all guys that are battling for kind of that last cornerback spot on the roster. But, I mean, you've got three more games for that, but obviously you just want to come out of this game healthy, and had it not be just terrible to watch, it would be just nice to see individuals making plays at some point.
Yeah, and, you know, you talk about it like Deontay and Jalen Thompson. Are they... I know it's, like you said, it's one game and it's so early, but how far away are they from being, you know, guys that can compete and play, you know, because Swearinger's on a one-year deal. You know, you look at it from that perspective, Dennis Gardeck, how much is he going to play even, right? Because, I mean, are they going to let Hicks and Gardeck play, or are they just going to wrap them in bubble wrap to make sure that they – are at the beginning of the season. So there's so many intriguing things, and part of it is just who's going to be on the field. I mean, literally, in game one of the preseason, that's one of the most intriguing things, is like who's actually going to play.
Yeah. And with that, let's wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. By the time you hear this, it'll be Wednesday or Thursday, so hopefully you're listening to it before the preseason game. If not, it'll be afterwards, and we'll be back in a week with some evaluations of what's coming out of camp. Hopefully there's nothing too bad that comes out of this game, but we will be back in again a week. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening. Go Cardinals, and let's enjoy this preseason game. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.
Rise up!